We're rolling. Welcome back to Knox and Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else we feel like talking about. It's officially episode 3. What is it, the 28th of July today?
Yep.
That's what's up. So, obviously, as we're recording this, it's episode 3. But for our listeners, episode 1 was just released last Friday. So, tons of really good feedback on that. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to everybody who has listened to the podcast so far. I wanted to share my appreciation. We have a couple of housekeeping things to take care of. The first being that I have made a lot of grammatical errors in how I speak after listening back to episode 1 specifically. I feel like I get put on the spot. So sorry, boys, because I kind of sound stupid for some of that.
We're just sign guys, Nick.
You sound stupid right now.
Yeah. No one cares. And if they do care, then go listen to something else.
Okay. The other thing legitimately that we didn't address that we were going to follow up on in episode 2 was the archery tournament.
Thunderheads.
Yeah. NAP Thunderheads. That too. Yeah. Yeah. But also, we didn't touch on the archery tournament. So, I ended up
scores.
Yeah, I ended up getting 8th place, as opposed to me thinking I was going to be close to podium. So, tied for 1st place were 3 people with a 207. And then I think, 4th place would have been... or I guess they did 3rd, 4th. I don't know. Anyway, there was a couple of people above me that had like a 202 and then like a 198, 194 or something like that. But yeah, that was pretty interesting. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the deer regulations again, because I feel like that was kind of confusing in episode 2. We touched on it and then we kind of went into a different story. So I just wanted to take a moment and, list out exactly what those are. So among the newly adopted regulations in the Lower Peninsula are limiting the liberty and independence hunts reserved for those 16 years or younger or hunters with disabilities to antlerless deer beginning in 2025. So previously a deer license or a combination license to hunt antlered or antlerless deer was allowed during those hunts. And what the new regulations are saying is that, the independence hunt and the liberty hunt are going to be antlerless only. So that's interesting. And I'm just reading this from bridgemichigan.com. The article is called Michigan Approves New Deer Hunting Regulations to to Address Overpopulation. So feel free to check that out if you want to do that.
They came out with a bunch of different stuff for the early doe hunts and late doe hunts.
Yep. So we're
also, I think that was just last week.
Right. So in addition, so hunters can kill up to 12 deer now with the combination license and 10 universal licenses. So theoretically a hunter could kill 2 bucks and 10 does, which I think has been normal for a while. You could have multiple antlerless tags.
Yeah. That seems like a lot.
Yeah. But I did see that the antlerless tags now are also getting dropped from $11, which is what they were last year, down to $5. So they're really trying to push doe hunting, mm-hmm. which is good. The commission also approved an extension to the archery season for antlerless deer through January 31st in a few counties. Just to name a few is Huron, Kent, Lapeer, and St. Clair, excluding the St. Clair Flats. And so previously our archery season is obviously October 1st to November 14th, which then you would go into rifle season, and then December 1st to January 1st, because you have that break after rifle season for muzzleloader and, you know, all that stuff. But the new antlerless season beginning January 2nd through the second Sunday, supposedly, not the Saturday, the second Sunday of the month, was also approved for several counties in the lower Michigan. And so there's a little bit of a discrepancy, because I'm pretty sure the article we read last time was said the second Saturday, but it's essentially the second weekend, and that would be for antlerless firearm season, for a late season. But to be completely honest with you, I'm for the new regulations because I would much rather have a more average deer population compared to just a ton of deer where we don't have a very mature population and we struggle to find resources. There's another thing that was interesting. This is in the same article. The excessive number of deer negatively impacts farmers and their crops. Deer can eat up to 8 pounds of vegetation a day. So it also impacts drivers. And this is a study from 2020. It says Michigan motorists reported 51,103 vehicle deer-related crashes in 2020. And as a result of those collisions, 1,400 people were injured and 5 people were killed. Which is, like, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
And I'm guessing the people who lost their life were probably on a motorcycle or driving a smaller car, maybe hit multiple deer.
Either that or swerved and swerved because of the deer. And
I feel like, you know, you go fast enough, too, and it rolls into the windshield.
Yeah.
I've heard of that. People get pretty busted up and get a hoof to the face.
Yeah, that's it is a problem, and I'm glad that Michigan took some time to address it. Obviously, we have different opinions on how that should have been handled, but I do think it was important to put in some sort of new regulation to be able to make that change. Struggling with your mic there, bud? All right. You good now?
I think I got to figure it out.
All right. Cool.
I was trying to be comfy over here.
Yeah. So there was, they also asked a gentleman by the name of Chad Timmer, who's the owner of the Outdoorsman Pro Shop in Jenison, which is just south of Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. And he says, we have a doe population problem and we need to deal with it. If we could go to a one-buck state for just a handful of years, we would revolutionize the quality deer herd in Michigan, which I would agree with, either a one-buck tag or an earn-a-buck tag. An earn-a-buck tag is obviously a little bit more harsh, but if you want to really promote, you know, harvesting does.
I know a ton of people that don't shoot does at all.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And I can understand where they're like, hey, I want to shoot a buck because I'm only going to be able to eat one deer, but I also want to get as much meat from that one deer as possible. And then they go out and they shoot a spike. And it's like, dude, shoot a doe.
Right.
I would understand if you shot a 7-year-old deer, you know, and it weighed 300 pounds, but you shoot a 150-pound spike and it's like, shoot a doe.
Right.
What are you doing? So, yeah, I mean, pretty exciting though. I am happy about that late season archery season that goes through the 31st. That's going to be really fun.
That is cool. I'm pretty excited about the early doe season that they extended to public land.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the last weekend of September, I think.
Yeah, for early antlerless?
Yeah.
Yep.
I wonder if you can, because they say it's firearm, but I wonder if you could use a bow for that.
I don't know. Last year, I asked the owner of the property I hunt, and he said to only use a rifle. I don't know if that was his recommendation because he wanted to be as
right,
you know, effective as possible, or if it's illegal to use a bow. I don't know, because the whole point of it is deer management. You're not there to like enjoy the hunt,
yeah,
sort of, you know. I mean, enjoy the hunt, but it's different. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I hope people take advantage of that. Especially if you're like, oh, I've got stuff going on in the fall. Great. Go out, get your deer in, you know, the last weekend of September or whatever, whenever that falls this year, and run with it. But, yeah, we have a whole lot of fun stuff planned this year. I've got to... There's an opportunity, might get permission in Ohio to go
in
hunt.
Ohio?
Yeah.
For you and two of your buddies?
Potentially, yep. go get on some Ohio Slammers.
Really?
It would have to be bow season, though.
That's okay.
So it would be bow only.
Long weekend?
Mm-hmm, exactly. A couple long weekends, probably like the last 2 weekends of October, I was thinking. That'd be cool.
Take the Corolla down there?
Yeah, whatever we wanted to do. Or pack into one of the Tacomas. I know my truck would make that drive to Ohio. Southern Ohio.
Right. Southern Ohio?
Yeah. Well, it's like, no, it would be, he said it was a 5-hour drive.
Can we stop at Cedar Point on the way?
No.
Whee!
No.
Why not?
Not in October, fellas.
Yeah, dude. You ever been to Cedar Point in
October? You ever heard
of
a sweater?
Yeah, it's, dude.
You plan on going on the slides?
Cedar Point.
That's what I was, that's what I was curious about. Is it
roller coasters, dude?
Cedar Point around Halloween time. We went there for my sister's birthday, like, early October.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all decked out for Halloween. They have like haunted houses and like it's so fun.
I thought Cedar Point was like mostly water.
No, they've got like
roller coasters.
Was it Six Flags out in California or something? I don't know.
Six Flags actually owns them now. They just bought them.
Yeah, they're all like the same companies.
But it's mostly
huge.
Roller coasters.
Well, I knew it was roller coasters, but I thought they were like water park based roller coasters. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, they've got a separate section for the water park.
That's cool. Well, maybe. Yes. If we get a big buck, we can celebrate at Cedar Point. How about that?
Deal.
Word. All right.
A little sidetrack there.
Yeah, it's okay.
That's what I think about. The only good thing about Ohio is Cedar Point.
Yeah.
Dude, they got big deer.
So does Iowa.
I just don't think about that.
You know anybody in Iowa that can get us permission for this year to go hunt? No. You want to draw an out-of-state tag for Iowa? No.
That's true.
So. Well, getting back to things, Jared, you had a backpacking trip here recently. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Me and I think 6 other buddies, we went out to South Manitou. Unfortunately, we could not get to North Manitou Island because some endangered birds decided to make the dock their nesting ground for the year.
Oh, that works.
Yeah, that's so... fun. Luckily, South Manitou has, I think my buddy was telling me he's been there before. He thinks South Manitou is cooler anyways, and they've got better camping. So, but yeah, we did a long weekend, rode the ferry out, almost missed it. And it was fun. It wasn't really like backpacking. I would compare it more to like camping because, you know, we 2-man carried a cooler in. We had a large 8-person tent.
Yeah, you didn't hike like 20 miles in.
Yeah, you know, we had the goods, we brought food and all that stuff. It wasn't like freeze-dried meals and stuff like that, you know. But yeah, no, we had a lot of fun. We went in there, got camp all set up, and just immediately hit the beach. And then we went and checked out some, like, they've got shipwrecks around the island, some really cool old-growth cedar forest.
How cold was Lake Michigan, or was it not bad?
It wasn't warm. I personally think it's warm now after swimming in Lake Superior yesterday. But yeah,
can you see the shipwrecks like from shore?
So the one, there's one. I think it's like kind of close to the dock, and that one, if you go up on like a high point, I think you can see it. And then the other one is actually like still sticking up out of the water. So can see it pretty good. Like, it's a modern ship. It's not like an old wood ship.
Right.
Did you go, like, snorkel dive them or anything, or were you just looking at them?
No, but someone did. If anyone who listens to podcasts has ever been to Manitou's, they know that when you get off the ferry, you have to bucket brigade everyone's backpacks off the ship or off the ferry. And someone had a ton of snorkeling gear attached to their bags. Someone was having a good weekend.
Wow.
And...
someone just died up at Isle Royal doing that. They were snorkeling the shipwrecks up there.
They get trapped, or
I don't remember. I didn't read the whole article. I just kind of skimmed through it, but so I don't know.
Well, maybe a riptide or something.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. Or
sharp metal injury. And just
I don't know.
Succumb to injuries later. I don't know.
That's unfortunate.
Speculate all day.
Yeah. It would be cool though.
But yeah, no, it was cool to just view it from there. And then they've got some good dunes, you know, because it's right there, part of Sleeping Bear National Lakeshore. Those were fun. let's see. We did all that, yeah, the first day. Second day, we went and checked out the lighthouse. That was pretty cool.
Is there a lighthouse on South Manitou?
Yeah, I think there's a lighthouse on South and North, and then they've also got one kind of between them out in the middle of the Manitou Passage because there's a shoal.
Oh.
So there's a, and the ferry goes right by it. You can get really, like, the ferry gets really close, so you can kind of view it, take pictures and stuff.
That's cool.
It's kind of like Standard Rock lighthouse up in Cay Bay, or off of, not Cay Bay, but off of that point there by, so here on Manistee National Forest, or here on Mountain Club. That's the name of it. Yep. But yeah, no, there was some cool stuff up there. And then, after the lighthouse, we went back over to the dunes. We thought we were going to have a fun time going down to the dunes and actually find a sandy beach. Unfortunately, all of the beaches were pretty rocky, so we just decided we didn't want to climb down the steep dune and then have to go back up it. So
that is the worst part, because it's really fun going down, and it really sucks going back up a sand dune.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with Pearson Stocking Drive, but there's like one of those really steep sand dunes that it tells you don't go down, you know, rescue by helicopter or Coast Guard boat.
Tell you it's like $2,500 or something.
Yeah.
Like $25,000.
You just see all these people going down it anyways. And yeah, we used to do that every time we went to it. We'd go down it and right back up and see who can get the fastest time.
That one on the scenic drive?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people do it. There were some people that had no business going down.
Oh, yeah. I've
seen
them. I
saw them starting to walk down. It's like, ooh, buddy, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. No, it's usually like, I think my best time was like 9.5 minutes.
And you're cooking.
That's and yeah, good. Like that's, you don't stop to drink water or anything. You're just head down and crawling up the sand dune like a bear or whatever. I don't know.
Well,
like
and
you're
you,
just
and
crawling
you,
the whole way. There's no walking.
No, and you have to be on your hands and feet because it's so steep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing is like you try to walk out and like try to peer over and see the bottom of it and you just can't.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. But this one wasn't quite that steep, but it was comparable.
It is a super cool area out there. We went out there last summer a couple times and just hung out. And I like that.
Yeah, even just what's the name of the big part of Sleeping Bear? They got some name for it.
The National Lakeshore?
Yeah, but there's a one section of it that's like...
The dune climb?
Yeah, it's just like maybe. The dune climb or whatever, where it's got seven dunes that you go across or whatever, and you...
There's the one I'm thinking of specifically will spit you right down into Lake Michigan.
Yeah, that's the dune climb.
Yeah, that one's fun because you're up on top of the dune, and it you know, it gets really hot, and you're all like, oh my gosh, I need to cool off, and you just sprint down, face plant in the sand a couple of times and then jump into the water.
Yeah. That's no, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, like I said, the beaches were a little rocky, so that was unfortunate. But we made do. It was still a lot of fun. There is a lake in the middle of the island that I don't think they were natural fish, because I think the DNR officers out there were saying that they, or the park rangers were saying that it was stocked, but I could be wrong on that. But we caught some pretty good-sized perch and good-sized smallmouth.
Did you eat anything?
Oh, yeah. We fried them up.
There you go.
Yep. They were pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we had some fun. It was kind of entertaining because it's a group of 20-something-year-old guys, and on the lakeshore side of our campsite was a nice little family trying to introduce their young kids to backpacking for the first time. And on the other side of us was a bachelor party of about 10 dudes.
Oh, wow.
And they were ripping it up every night.
Everybody's getting rowdy.
Yep. I'm sure that dad hated both of our groups because we weren't as bad as the bachelor party, but we certainly had fun.
Well, it may as well have been a bachelor party, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. but yeah.
At least it made you guys look a little bit better.
Yeah, it made us look a little more well-respected or behaved. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Cooking up the fish, whatnot, that was good. Lighthouse, good. And then the last day, we were waiting for the ferry, and it was supposed to show up at 11, and it did not show up until 3.
So, I'd have been pretty upset.
Why?
Well, so apparently the 11, the ranger was misinformed, because he was told everyone needs to be to the Sunday ferry at 11 a.m. So that's what he told all the hikers that got off that were staying till Sunday.
Oh.
And there was a 2 p.m. ferry. But then it was just an hour late. So.
Crazy.
We just laid around on the dock for 4 hours getting sunburnt.
Even if you were there at 2 o'clock, that would suck to have to wait an hour.
Yeah. But everyone was there at 11. Like, you're supposed to clear out of your campsite by 10. That way the new hikers can go get campsites. Because there was, right. I think they said there was like 140 or 150 campers.
Wow.
Because North Island's closed.
Is the island that big?
It was like, when you're hiking, you're going to be running into people, but it's not like it's crowded. The camping areas were a little bit crowded, the area that we were in, because I think it was the only camping area that allowed fires. But, oh, yeah. So it was a little more crowded there, but...
It's surprising how, I mean, those places are crowded now.
I would think like that, you know, my opinion, that whole island, that's the other bad thing about that island. The whole thing's covered in poison ivy. We all got it pretty bad. Not just me. It was that like sucks. Everyone that went on the trip got it pretty bad. And we even had soap. Like we were cleaning off and whatnot in the lake, trying to avoid getting poison ivy, and it still just didn't matter. But the thing that I was getting at is the campsites, they only have so many of them, and you're only allowed like 2 tents per site, and you have to stay within a foot of this pole that they put up. And they're like, well, we don't want you guys to kill the vegetation. And we're like, well, we got an 8-person tent anyways, so, and it's all poison ivy, so who cares?
Yeah, I mean, you
make a few more campsites.
You have to camp in the campsites?
You have to. There's no dispersed camping.
Oh, really?
I don't know if there's dispersed camping on North or not. I think the ranger said there is.
I think there is. Me and my dad did when I was
little. I think it's still only dispersed camping in certain areas.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the thing that's hard, I mean, I can appreciate the, I'm not sure what that was, but.
There's a bird outside.
Little chickadee out on the.
Nice.
Suet cake.
The part that's hard with those parks, though, is like, I can appreciate the fact that they're trying to maintain a certain level of conservation as far as like, hey, we're going to protect this vegetation. But when it's an invasive species or a nuisance species like poison ivy or something, you know, if it was wildflowers, I'd be like, all right, I can understand why they're like, oh, this is pretty, like, let's leave it, you know, okay. But something like poison ivy, that's rough. And it, you still only had the one tent or a couple of tents, but it was just a bigger tent.
We just had a couple of tents and we didn't even put it in vegetation. We managed to stay in the campsite, which was nice. But
you're just surrounded by poison ivy, which is a little annoying.
That was annoying. But you look around and it's like the way that they place these campsites, there's no reason they couldn't place a few more. Like, hey, you can't sit there and tell me. The way they book the island, you have to like make a reservation to go out there, and they can see who's staying for how many days and whatnot. So they obviously know how many campsites they have total, how many tents they can have on each campsite, and they know how many people are there. Like, that, you shouldn't be selling the tickets if you can't support the people that are there.
Yeah, and I think part of, like, not having more campsites, maybe they're trying to spread you out a little bit so that you're not right on top of people.
That's the thing, is the campsites are all right next to each other.
You're just talking about going further down in one direction and adding more.
Yeah, they could put a few more on the trail.
Yeah.
Or even like certain sections. It was weird because they would have, you'd be in the camping section of the trail.
Yeah.
And then they would have like 3 campsites by each other, and then you'd walk a quarter mile and there'd be 5 more right by each other. It's like to spread them all out and add a few more.
That's so hard because that's a national park. And so
I think it's just part of National Park Lakeshore. I don't know if the whole island itself is national park or not.
I think it's classified. I thought it was. I think it's classified as a national park.
I thought it was technically like it's Sleeping Bear Dunes National Park still.
That's what
are supposed to be, you know, like the whole story about Sleeping Bear Dunes is like the bear and then the manitous are the little bears.
Yeah.
Right. My point with that is like federal funding for parks. I don't know exactly how it works, but if I had to guess, Sleeping Bear Dunes is not getting as much funding as, say,
Glacier.
Teton or Glacier, just because it's not as popular. Still a popular, you know, there's still hundreds of thousands of people that visit a year, but not as much as, you know, some of these other parks, especially out west, versus if that was just a state park, that's the advantage of having a state park, is like Michigan would have done a better job regulating that, because there's less state parks than there are national parks. You know, one state can regulate their state parks better than the government can regulate all of the national parks.
No, I agree.
So that
I agree.
They just might have an issue with funding, which I could see, but at the same time, you know, that doesn't require you get a couple of laborers with a weed whacker. You can clear brush, you know, small vegetation for campsites. That's not very difficult, because you're not removing trees. Like, people want the trees there, so.
Yeah, that was the other bummer. Whatever. Our camping spot had, like, no trees to set up hammocks. Mm-hmm. So.
That's why I don't use
that
hammocks.
That was a bummer. But, well, we had, like I said, we had the tents.
Right,
we were good to go. Yeah.
You got, like, leisure hammocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you want to camp in it. It was nice enough. It didn't rain all weekend. It was
How were the bugs?
Cool. They weren't bad at all. Like,
no?
Really?
First thing in the morning, the mosquitoes were pretty bad if you were walking late. If you were walking right by Florence Lake, but that lake in the middle of the island. But other than that, they weren't really that bad.
No.
I think the only thing we didn't really check out was, like, the old farmland and stuff that they had there. Because, you know, people used to live on the islands and whatnot. But we did get to hear a cool story when we were up in the lighthouse. Apparently a few years ago, or might have been more than a few, but some delinquents, like, came into the island and started just trashing it. Like, they were breaking boats and, like, historic wood boats, and they tried to steal the Fresnel lens out of the lighthouse.
Jesus.
And shattered it, because it's a huge glass lens that they're trying to fit through a little man door in the lighthouse. And it was, I forget what the lady said it was worth, but it was, like, $10 million to get an actual new one, so they have a replica one in there now.
Oh, that sucks, dude.
Yeah. But it was still pretty cool up there.
Yeah, I don't understand people.
We asked them,
their
we're
entire
like,
point
what,
is just
what was the point? Like, why were they going in there? And they're like, yeah, we still don't know to this day.
Didn't they catch them?
I don't know. The lady didn't really seem to know that much. She just knew about what was damaged. And
but yeah, I don't know. That doesn't make sense why you would go somewhere.
Just
especially,
you know,
like, put
yeah.
it up that
especially
much work to go to the island.
Right, that's a lot of effort.
Just to break shit. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It must have just had a really bad experience or something.
Who knows? Yeah, no, that was pretty fun, though.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I would like to do something like that. A lot of times when I think about doing like a camping trip or whatnot, it revolves around hunting. Like, oh, I'd love to go out west, but I don't want to backpack hike, because then all I'm going to be thinking about is hunting the whole time. Like, well, there's an elk, right, but I don't have my bow or a tag. Versus if you go elk hunting, you can backpack camp that whole time too. So it's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I feel like that's somewhat of the nice part of, like, doing something where you're by water or whatever, and you're more so there as a vacation, not to hunt.
Yeah,
you know,
no, it's a leisure for sure.
Yeah,
I need to do,
like, I've done,
I think the end of August we need to set something up.
Pictured Rocks, I did that one in the spring, and it kind of sucked, so I'd kind of like to get out there in the summer, but I don't
know.
That's
August
long...
would be all right, because it's going to be hot still.
Yeah.
Pictured Rocks is a long backpacking trip. Like, we went from Grand Marais all the way to Munising, and it took us 3 days.
Dude, holy cow.
So we were doing, you know, almost 20 miles a day.
Yeah,
it
sucked. I don't know that I could do
it
that.
It was not fun. You just...
It'd be rough.
You wake up, start hiking, and it's just, it's not like a leisurely hike either. It's, you're just cooking all day long. You got blisters, everything hurts, and then you sit down. Well, you set up your camp and everything, and you basically crawl into bed, because once you stop moving, you're not going to be able to move again. And then you wake up, break your joints back into motion, and start death marching again to the next camping spot. And that's the bad part too. Like, if you get tired, you don't get to just stop and camp there for the night, because you have to reserve your campsite.
Oh, so you have
for
Picture to,
Rocks,
you
have
to
make it however far you decided you were going to go.
Oh, gosh. That sucks.
Yeah. Well, we contemplated, you know, maybe camping, because it was spring. No one was out there.
Right.
But it was still like, well, no, if we don't go all the way, we're not going to make it in 3 days, and we all have to work on Monday type of deal. So
yeah, well, that's what, like, when me and my dad went to Isle Royal, we built in a day that we didn't have to do anything. So if there was bad weather or whatever, we could, or we found a really cool, you know, camp spot or whatever, we could hang out there all day. And we had one extra day where we didn't have to do anything. Just kind of built into the trip.
No, that's good. Yeah. Because that gives you time, even if you're just like, shit, dude, you know, it's a 5 day, you know, 5 day hike or whatever. And you got 6 days to do it. You get 3 days in, you're like, I'm cooked. I'm going to take a day to recover.
Yeah, that, like, there was one day we thought about using it. It just, you know, downpoured. We walked through a bunch of brush, so we were just completely soaked. And we were like, man, it'd be kind of nice to not have to hike tomorrow. But, you know, it was ended up fine. Our stuff dried out pretty fast, and we were able to go through it. But
that's that Sika Dew Point jacket.
Yeah, dude. It was a lifesaver.
It's a very good rain jacket. It's very overpriced. That is if you pay full price for that thing.
I would never pay full price for it.
I was lucky enough to get mine at a discount. Not as much of a discount as yours, but I still got, like, I think it was like equated to about $70 off.
That's not bad.
But I mean, it's still a $280 rain jacket, which is absurd.
A little crazy. I want to get rain pants, but the rain pants don't go on sale as much, so I can't find a.
Yeah, you have to pay attention to the closeouts. Yeah. That's how I save a lot of money on hunting gear.
The only thing rain pants are good for is if you're hiking in areas where there's overgrowth.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion.
Right. Yeah, usually.
Like, if it's just raining out, don't bother.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how hard it's raining, because they can definitely keep you dry.
I did when I did the Jordan
Valley. If
it's raining that hard, it's just going to soak through them.
When I did the Jordan Valley last year, I had gaiters on and then just regular pants.
Yeah.
And the gaiters helped for all the, you know, overgrowth on the trail or whatever, but it rained all day and we did 22 miles.
Yeah.
And it was fine. I was like absolutely, I was completely dry.
I don't know
I just got a bad rain jacket, rain pants.
Well, I've just specifically with the way that this, I've got a couple of rain jackets, including a pretty nice Carhartt rain jacket. And I don't think there's any, just the way that the Sika jacket is built, I don't think you'd be able to soak through it like at all. I don't know how to explain it, but there's not a level of water. I can hold my arm under the sink for 10 minutes and no water gets through the jacket like it.
Hmm.
So
yeah, because mine are just like lightweight Arc'teryx. Like there's no insulation to them.
Is it like a fabric base?
Arc'teryx is good stuff.
Yeah, mine, you wear them for, you know, 4 hours and they're starting to get a little wet through.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think
that surprises me.
I was really upset about it. I don't know if maybe I just need to do like the ivory flakes or whatever, wash it again.
Seam seal it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's in like patches that it soaks through. No, it's because it's mainly on my shoulders.
Oh, so it could be the seam up top.
I don't know if Arc'teryx has a seam on the top. I think they do it a little goofy, like on the edge here. So I don't know. I'd have to look at it.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I don't know.
Because Arc'teryx is like,
they make good stuff. Yeah. Like I'm not mad with the other stuff that I got, other than poor decisions on footwear. They made some really nice, I'm going to say road running shoes that were advertised as trail shoes. So I took them trail hiking and they are basically like racing flats. They have no support. So my feet are pretty bad.
See, my hiking shoes, the Salomon Cross Hike 2, they don't have any sole to them. So I don't know that I'd want to take them on like a trail per se, but as long as you're hiking in like dirt or sand, it's all right. If you're on rocks or concrete, they're not comfortable.
I feel like it also depends on how far you're going, because like the Arc'teryx, I don't mind them on trails or whatever. You know, the trails that we were on and Pictured Rocks were decent, but it was just like there's no support. So by the time you've hiked 14 miles, you're getting pretty worn out. Especially I have high arches too, so right. I need good support.
I've never done 14 miles in those shoes. I think I did 3 miles this year at TAC on Friday, because I did two courses and then hiked around a bunch, walked a bunch around the base, but yeah, I don't know. That's unfortunate. Gear is, it's so hard because a lot of times what guys will do, if I ask someone their opinion on something, I feel like they become a salesman, you know? So like
the best thing is the thing they have.
Not to put you on the spot here, Justin, but when I was like, hey, like I'm thinking about getting a nicer backpack, you're like, dude, Kafaru's the shit. And they are. Like after buying one, I'm glad I bought a Kafaru. But trying to research between like Mystery Ranch or Kafaru, and there's obviously a bunch of other, you know, yeah, for backpacks. Like
you don't want to hear like, what's bad, what's good about it. You want to know what's bad about it.
Right.
So you
exactly.
can compare it to what the other bad stuff,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. And I feel like my like I have Kafaru stuff, but I also have other brands. Like I have a Stone Glacier tent, and I think that's really the only one.
Well,
I know people with Mystery Ranch stuff and whatnot. And
the Kuyu bag.
And the Kuyu. My dad's got a Kuyu bag.
That's why I was like more willing to just trust you on it and go with it. And I'm glad I did.
Right. The only bad thing about Kafaru is the price.
Yeah, but like a lifetime warranty, dude. You buy the bag, that's it. Like you, that's it.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything more. Yeah.
And it's comfortable.
Unless you're like us and you're gear nerds and you've got to constantly buy new things because you think it's going to make you a better hiker or bow hunter. But, yeah.
I just like trying different stuff.
Yeah, that too. I love tinkering.
Like, I don't think it's going to make me better. I just like...
That's me with my bow, though. I'm constantly putting new stuff on it.
Right. Just for fun.
Yeah. Just try it out.
I think I'm the same way with skiing.
Yeah, that would make sense, too.
I think I have, like, 3 or 4 ski jackets because I'm constantly, like, they all keep me warm pretty good. It's right. just...
That or like, do you ever, well, probably not anymore, but did you ever mess around with like settings on your skis, like how tall your skis are, different binding positions or anything like that?
When I worked at the tune shop, I played around with it quite a bit, but you know, you only have so much adjustment with where they are. I had a really old beater pair of skis that I didn't care about doing remounts, so I would play around with the position on those a little bit. Like those skis were like Swiss cheese already anyways, so but because they were passed down from like I think 5 different instructors before I got to them, and they all had different boot sizes, so you kept having to remount the bindings, and the skis were like, yeah, don't do big jumps on those because they might snap in half.
That's what's up.
You have to drill holes in them.
Yeah, you drill holes really? Through the ski and you screw the bindings into the ski.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Weird.
There's like a jig and everything. It's not like you're just randomly drilling holes.
Right.
Yeah, because we all know how good we are at drilling a hole in the proper spot.
Yeah.
Not that good.
Anyway.
Did you see that? Did you guys put up that Two River?
Cabinet? Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you're referencing?
That, well, no. That was, I know that was done on a router, but.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
We could talk about it later. But anyway, that's what I was curious about, I guess, was just gear related with skiing.
Yeah, I used to play around with that stuff a bit too. And like I played around with different boots and, you know, I started off with really loose like park boots and now I'm in a pretty stiff boot. And I just, you know, it also depends on your style. When you're first starting out, you're kind of figuring out what kind of riding you like the most. And I'd rather just go ride through the trees and rip down the hill, so I don't really need super flexible stuff.
Yeah. It'd be different if you were only doing quarter pipe tricks
or
something.
Park rat.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
Yeah. Other than backpacking, this weekend just got back from the UP.
Yeah. Hey, we're just going to go up there? Or
yeah, you know, lived up there for a few years, so... It was nice to get back up there and just visit all the things I like about being up there. And we were reconnecting with some old friends as well. So that was a good time. Yeah, we went and saw some waterfalls. Saw Douglas Houghton Falls, largest waterfall in Michigan.
It's pretty cool.
It is.
I don't think I've been there.
I've been there one time.
Where is it?
It's right outside of Lake Linden, kind of between Lake Linden and Larriam. Like in the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that area very well.
Up by Houghton.
It's by Calumet, kind of.
Okay.
Like if you're heading to Calumet, the along the lakeside instead of taking US 41 from Houghton. But yeah, saw that. That was pretty cool. I remember the first time we went there, there was a dead deer laying on the rocks at the bottom that must have fallen off the cliff. Ooh. Like, there's a big cliff, and you can just walk right up to it. Yeah, that was pretty cool. We did a mine tour. That's just kind of the history up there. It's pretty sweet as well.
How was that? Was that fun?
You know, it's like when you first go, it's a little nerdy, but then when they start telling you about all the stuff when you're actually down in the mine, that's it gets a lot cooler then. Hmm. Like at first they kind of tell you about like the steam hoist that they still have there and they're showing it off. Because like there's none left in the area. Really? It's like the only one left is where this.
There's no copper mines left?
No, the mines, like you can still see plenty of remnants of old mines and whatnot.
Just none of them are functional?
Don't go into them because that is against the law. Because you can get trapped in them if a rock falls or something. But, yeah, there's plenty of remnants and whatnot. And there's one other mine. I think Delaware Mine does a self-guided tour where you just pay and you can go in there on your own. But, like, the Quincy Mine does a... They actually have a tour guide and they kind of tell you about the history. They have some of the old equipment. Like, they have the old rock carts that they used to load rock into and take it down over to the rock skid that they used to hoist all the rock out of the... mine and whatnot. They've got the old hammer drills and whatnot that they used to blast holes into the rock, and then they'd pack them full of powder and blast the rock apart, and they actually turn it on and operate it for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And they turn out all the lights and stuff down there, too, so you can see what it was like if, like, you were down there and your candle blew out.
Just dark, dark.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can sit there and wave your hand in front of it. There's no natural light. You can wave your hand in front of your face super fat and nothing.
That's scary.
I thought it was kind of cool. And then, other than that, we did a little bit of side-by-side riding out to High Rock Bay.
Did you, like, rent them or something?
No, my buddy works for Polaris.
Oh, really?
And they get... to take like a they have a limited selection of vehicles that they get, but they get it like a vehicle that they can take and keep it for 2 years and then they give it back, get a new one.
Well, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I want to go work at Polaris. Right. So yeah, so he had a Razor that we took out and went ripping down. I have to say that's a lot better than taking a vehicle out there
because oh, yeah.
They're actually meant to handle all the rocks and bumps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and we went up on Brockway Mountain. That was cool if anyone knows what it is, but otherwise not really. It's just like a really big hill that with a huge cliff. Really? And you can see all around you. It's pretty awesome. You can see Lake Superior and then quite a bit of forest. It's good for fall color as well. But and then we did a little cliff jumping at Devil's Washtub.
Oh, I think I know which one that is.
Yeah, there's a big arch and
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you got, like, the one pool that, and then it flows down to the river.
No, or there's like no river. It's just, like, a little pool right there that the water washes into. They call it, like, a devil's washtub is just, like, a feature.
But then there, but it, is it, okay, maybe it's a different one. The one I'm thinking of has, like, this, it's at the bottom of the canyon type of whatever you'd want to call that. And then the water just flows. Not like a river that you'd be able to boat down, but the water flows down.
Oh, you're thinking of Canyon Falls?
Probably, yeah, because it was by a waterfall.
Yeah, Canyon Falls is where a lot of tech students go jumping at.
That would make sense.
And it's a lot warmer as well.
Oh, really?
The Sturgeon River is quite a bit warmer. Pretty sure it's the Sturgeon River. But, yeah, Lake Superior's pretty cold.
I'm, I just got a couple of trail cam pictures, and I'm upset because... I've only got $2 on camera this year. One of them's a little 6-point, and one of them's a spike. Nothing good.
Huh.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Property owner told me last time I was talked to him, he's like, dude, you have to shoot does this year. Like, we need to take a lot of them out.
That Ohio hunt's looking a little better.
Yep.
Dude, I don't know. I think it would be fun, like, if there was a landowner that's, like, just shoot a bunch of does, how fun it would be just to go shoot does.
I'll talk to him for, like, if you want to come out early antlerless and just go plug does.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because he just takes them all in a truck. He gets them all processed, and then he donates the meat.
Well, I want some meat.
Well, you could do that, too, but you're probably, like, if you get into a spot, you might have an opportunity to shoot like four or five does.
Really?
Yeah, because especially if you sit all day, they just keep coming out into the field. They're stupid.
I'd be all about that.
It does kind of fuck up archery season, though, because the deer are really skittish for the first week of archery season. Because it's, you know.
But if you could fill the could fill the freezer in the first,
true,
know, however long, and then you can just have fun with it.
True.
You don't have the pressure of like, man, I really need to get a deer.
100%. Yeah.
That's the way to do it. And then we can shooting, then we can hunt with trad bows all year.
Well, I like shooting a doe early in archery season because it gives you the confidence for the remainder of the season. Like, I already harvested a deer this year. I'm good. I can just focus on shooting a buck.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, then there's, then, you know, you just do it with your rifle instead. And it's like, okay, I'm good. I'm not skunked this year, you know.
Yeah, it sucks when you don't get a deer at all. Freezer's just empty.
Tell me about it.
Is that you last year?
That must be rough.
No, because my brother was pretty successful last year. I think he shot two does.
Yeah, that's what happens when I don't shoot one.
Or
I
just get a doe and
get something from my dad.
A doe and a 90-pound doe. But
it's all good.
It was legal. Yeah. Didn't have spots. It's all good. So. 450 Bushmaster.
Ugh.
Lost one of the shoulders.
I'm on the fence about the 450 Bushmaster.
Can we talk controversial
calibers?
Yeah.
So
I feel like
my opinion. I feel like that gun is good down south.
For sure.
You can't use rifle barrels. That's a lot better than.
That's what they made it. I mean, that's what they. Yeah. That's why it's so popular.
Straight ball.
But then when you use it up here, and blow apart a deer.
It's not that powerful though. It's a short 45-70.
No, right? He shot it at 40 yards.
Yeah, right, yeah, true.
And it's like shooting a 12-gauge, you know, like a one-ounce slug. So, as far as the, not energy-wise, but as far as, like, the damage it'll do, it's a...
Yeah, maybe. I've never shot a deer with a slug.
Have you ever seen anybody shoot one with a slug? It's pretty...
I don't know anyone that hunts with a shotgun.
Pretty nasty. It makes a big hole.
Yeah.
I mean... A 300 Win Mag will make a big hole in the deer, too. But
right.
So is a muzzleloader.
I shot that one buck with
it. Yeah, 60 cal muzzleloader.
Mine's 50, yeah.
Ugh. I need a muzzleloader, but I also don't want to go through the cleaning process of a muzzleloader, because I feel
it's
like
not that bad. It's just basically the
same. If you get a modern one, it's not bad.
I'm talking like a cap lock.
Oh, yeah, no.
Dude, and you can't get caps anymore. Like
percussion caps
number,
are terrible.
You
number
just 10s can't find them.
Yeah.
You like they're just not out there right now.
You have to order them online, and they're like 3 months back ordered.
You can't even do that. It's like you just can't get them right now.
Did Remington like stop making them or something?
I have no idea. I haven't looked for them, but my dad's been looking for them, and then this other guy I know was looking for them. And like I have a little stash, and I'm like, shit, I don't even want to shoot that thing because who knows when they're going to come back.
How many's in your stash? 200?
No, probably not that.
Excuse my ignorance, but you're not talking about like the primer caps, right? You're talking.
No, like the little tiny, like that goes on the nipple.
Like a cowboy revolver?
That's what my muzzleloader does.
Percussion.
You put
cap.
It in the breech plug. You put a little primer cap in the breech plug.
No, like yours uses probably like shotgun ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
No, this is different. It's a.
Jared, you know the cap and ball revolvers?
Yeah.
The cowboy ones that they've got the little percussion cap that goes on the nipple on the back of the cylinder.
It's like that little tiny brass.
That's the same type of
cap.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I did at one point. So there was a period of time where I was going to buy a die-cast cap gun and then put a really powerful spring in it, and instead of using like cap gun caps, I was going to put percussion caps in it because they're, you know, way louder.
Yeah.
Never got around to doing that, but I was not a smart kid, so.
It's all right.
I should just say I'm not smart, but.
We can still do it with little primer caps.
That'd be fun. I don't have a cap gun though, so.
Yeah.
I have a little Derringer cap gun. It takes the paper ones.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
They're terrible.
Right.
I bought one of those when I was like 8 from Fort Michilimackinac.
Yeah.
They got the like fake flintlocks.
Yeah.
And they wanted you to use the paper caps for them. And they would just make like a little, like the little fireworks that you throw at the ground, the little snappers.
Yeah.
It'd make a pop like that. And it just wasn't powerful enough. So I started using Elmer's glue, like the glue stick. And I'd glue like four of them together and then put it on there. Pop! It's way louder.
I feel like every kid does some like experimenting with that. Like cap guns. And then when you get a little bit older, like fireworks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember Jared, my first firework experiment was taking those poppets that you throw at the ground and taking like five boxes of them, opening all of them up, and then putting them in like a plastic sandwich bag. I should start off. I did it with one box first. And it was way louder, so I'm like, one box, how about five? And it turns out that stuff gets really sensitive when you have a lot of it.
Oh, yeah?
Combined. And, it, like, I barely, like, I poured it all in the bag, sealed it up, and then twisted it so it was tight. And then I barely moved it, and it went off.
Wow.
Like, just barely moved it, and the thing went off in a car.
Nice.
With my sister. She was very upset.
Really?
Yeah.
Was
I wasn't
similar,
allowed to play with poppets the rest of that 4th of July.
Was that similar to M66's don't blow up a glass bottle, so we're going to stick a bottle rocket in there?
Yeah. If one thing doesn't do it, the next will.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We should preface that with, you know, we said when you're younger, we still do this.
Yeah, we do.
Some of us still do this.
Yeah.
Last year, I took a bunch of sparklers and... If you take a bunch of sparklers and light them all, like the whole box, and light them, it'll just, burns and
like it's way more aggressive.
Yeah. And it's like welder's flash. You know, so I had a bunch of kids standing around and stuff.
You
like,
can
hey,
weld
kids,
with a sparkler.
Check this out. And like,
I don't know if it was legit, but
I saw that
guy.
Did
you see
that
on from the shirts that I get?
Yeah.
Yeah. He posts right afterwards and says that's fake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
He ends all of his videos that. And it says that it's for show.
See, that pisses me off. Because I was really hoping that. This is just a wire with some shit around it. And this is just a wire with some shit around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that dude is funny, though.
It's because you're not a welder, Nick.
I'm not even close to a welder. Nope. Not like... I can run a monkey MIG gun.
I could do it.
That's about it. Huh?
You want to try it at work?
What?
Want to try it at work?
Sparklers?
Yeah, bring a sparkler in.
I got some sparklers.
Bring them into work.
Okay.
They started making them with a plastic rod.
What?
Or not plastic.
What kind
wood.
Of spark? What
wood.
Kind?
Wood. Instead of metal.
Those are the morning glories. The ones that have like all the different
morning
stuff.
Glories?
Yeah, they got all the, that's the name of them.
You got any whisker do's, whisker don'ts?
What, my sneaks and caps?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they got, like, those ones pop and, like, do cool little flare type stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't bought fireworks in a couple of years.
Well.
My first time playing with fireworks, we were on a sand dune, and we set it up, light it. It was, like, a rocket type of deal. It wasn't, like, mortar or anything like that. It was just looked like a rocket. And so we set it up on the fins or whatever. And we light it, and we take off running. Well, when we took off running, the sand started collapsing, and it tipped over, so it was pointed out sideways.
Straight
and
at a pontoon.
Right over a pontoon and blew up right above it.
Nice.
Yeah, and so we all grabbed our stuff and just took off running, went back down the hill. It was, you know, me and my brother are 16 or 17, and this other dude's like 28. And he's just laughing his ass off the whole time. My parents are like, what are you guys running down here for? We're like, nothing. I guess they didn't notice. So.
Right.
The news article's like, two local 16-year-old boys set cruise missile above pontoon boat.
Yeah, oh, well, and there was one year, too, where there was, like, a burn notice, like, because it was super dry that year. So we're like, all right, we got to make sure we point them out over the water. And then one of them decided, like, midair to just turn, and it blew up right over the trees. We're like, oh, it's fine. All the sparks have been going out. And we watched this one spark fall all the way down into a pine tree. And so we're, like, freaking out. You know, nothing ever happened, but we were pretty worried.
Yeah, thank God. With a ban. And Jared's like, yeah, I'll just point over the water.
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
It's
I know a guy that he caught somebody's property on fire.
It's crazy how many fires.
You got to be careful.
Yeah, this whole field just
lit
it up. And he was probably like 10. I think he was 10 or 12 or something.
What's the road? Yeah.
And he just like ran back and was like, hey, Mom, there's a fire over there.
That's why they require you to be 18 to buy them because, you can catch a lot of shit on fire.
Should be 30.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to be 30 this year and I don't feel very responsible.
You're still just as bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you hang out with us, so.
That's true.
I mean, it is what it is.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, it's all right.
Someday we'll be responsible.
But I don't know if it's being responsible because we know that it's not always a good idea, but we're just trying to live life on the edge, you know, so.
Not even that. You're just having fun.
Right. Yeah.
It's not it's not like we do anything that's actually crazy. That's like dangerous or anything.
No, I forget who it is. Somebody who's like, you have to allow your kids to do stupid things safely.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Dangerous things safely. I forget who said that, but I mean, that's true.
I've heard people talk about like, you know, letting them play with an egg, you know, and eventually they're going to break it. Right. But they don't know they're going to, you know, and then it's like, oh, yeah, shit, this, you know, but you just let them figure out that stuff. And
if my parents had handed me an egg and they're like, go play with this, the very first thing I'm doing is chucking that thing at a tree.
Yeah.
My mom's like, oh, it's broken. I'm like, yeah, I know. I wanted it to explode.
That was the plan.
Yeah.
I had some expired.
Grenade out.
I had some expired eggs. I don't know. It was probably 3-4 years ago. And I let my kid chuck them at a tree in my backyard. And he still talks about it.
And they smelled really bad.
Yeah.
And did they explode?
Oh, yeah.
So they were, like, fermenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's, like, I mean, he still talks to me. He's like, hey, remember that time we chucked those eggs at that tree? I'm like, yep. It's crazy.
That's awesome. Dude, we need to get your kid to squirrel hunt.
He loves squirrel hunting.
But if he was that excited over shooting a mushroom.
Does he have a BB gun or a pellet gun? What'd you get him?
He doesn't have anything yet. He has a bow. And he's not super.
Is it like a real bow or like a.
It's a little compound.
A youth model?
Yeah.
It's like the Bear Scout, I think is what it's called. Or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But it's not like you're flinging plastic arrows or whatever.
Bear Cub or something like that. No,
it shoots them pretty good.
It's a real deal.
I think
they're fiberglass arrows.
They're fiberglass.
They got like little stainless points on them.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it sticks in a 3D target.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty comparable to the type of bow that I started on. And I was 7.
I think they're like 15 pounds or something. Like they're not.
Yeah, some of mine was adjustable. I think mine went up to like 25 pounds or something like that. But
this one's not. He's about ready for a bigger one. But we'll see. But he doesn't have a BB gun or anything. I've been, you know, taking him out squirrel hunt, he either just walk or I used to have the backpack that he ride in, and we did that quite a bit. But
would you trust him if he had like a little single shot BB gun? Do you think you could have him?
Little Red Rider?
Not yet.
Yeah, I've got one. I
have a Red Rider, and I've tried to get him to shoot. I'm like, buddy, we should go shoot that, and he's like, yeah, I don't know, I just want to shoot my bow. And I'm like, okay,
that's cool. What's up, dude.
That's cool.
That's what's up.
But eventually. Yeah, we'll work into it. I think it's a noise thing. He doesn't like loud noises.
Does he like your car?
Not when it's loud.
So not very often.
What about like get him those Walker earmuffs?
He has some, but we haven't gone shooting a whole ton. But it's about time to start some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think as soon as he realizes like that the loud noise is just a product of having fun, I don't think he'll be scared of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still, what is he, 6 now?
He's 6. He just turned 6.
Yeah, he got a little while.
He's still young.
Yeah, I'm not.
I was 7. It was my 7th birthday that I got my Red Rider. And then I think it was my 7th Christmas is when I got my bow.
Right.
Yeah, I remember I was 6 or 7. I got a BB gun for Christmas.
Yep.
I was probably around there. I don't remember. But I remember my parents got me BBs, and I wanted a BB gun. I was like, man, I really want a BB gun. Mm-hmm. And
they got you BBs without the gun?
When I, like, this is the thing. I opened, my parents are a bunch of tricksters, man. And, like, I opened this, you know, package or whatever, and it was BBs. And I was so upset because I was like, it wasn't the last thing, too. And I was like, I didn't get this BB gun, but I got these dumb BBs. I was like, what the hell? Like, that's
what
dumb.
Am I going to use these for? And slingshot?
And I remember just being so upset. And then, like, my grandpa, like, went out to the car and got the BB gun. And I was like, oh.
That's what's up, dude.
Hell yeah.
That's funny.
My dad, what he did that when I got my bow. That was all I asked for Christmas was my bow. And they wrapped it and put it behind the couch. So, like, we came out, you know, Christmas morning, and you're not looking behind the couch, you know. On a normal morning, I might have noticed it, but you're looking at, like, the tree, and, you know,
right.
It's Christmas morning. So, like, opening gifts or whatever, and I'm like, looking at my packages, and I'm like, none of these look big enough for a bow. Like that was my main focus, you know, and right. It's like, got a Lego set. I'm like, hey, thanks, Mom, you know, like, you know, and I'm like.
Doesn't actually care.
The whole time, I'm like, no, like, I cared about it, but I was like, I want this bow. And same type of thing. It was like the last gift, I think. I forget what they got me. I think it was either arrows or it would have been like some other accessory to the bow. And I was like, and then my dad pulls it out and I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Right. I remember my dad when I got my first deer rifle, or not. The first deer rifle that was mine, I borrowed some from my grandpa, that 30-40 that I have. I used that for a lot of years.
Borrowed it, as in I still have it, and I'm almost 30?
He gave it back. No, I just got it back last year. He took it back for a while.
Oh, really?
And then I guess he gave me that 300 Savage, and I never gave that back. But when I got, like, that 45-70, that Marlin, my dad got that for me. And he has the same one at 444. It's the same, you know, Marlin guide gun or whatever, short barrel. And I always wanted him to take his scope off of it. And I was like, you got to ditch the scope, man. This would be so much cooler without a scope. So I came home one day, and he had, which I didn't know at the time, but it was, you know, my 45-70. And he's like, oh, yeah, I took the scope off my gun. And I was, you know, checking it out. It looks exactly the same. And I was like, man, this thing's so sweet. Like, oh, it's so cool with, like, you know, whatever. And then he's like, all right, you know, go put it back in the gun safe. And when I went to go put it back, there was his.
Right.
And I went to put it back and was like, well, what the hell? Like, there's that. So what's this? And I, like, look at him. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, that's yours. And it was like, what the fuck? Like, oh, just.
That was just a random day before deer season?
I don't remember for sure. But, yeah, it had to be the summertime.
It wasn't like your birthday, though.
No.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it was just.
That's cool.
Because him and his buddy, bought the same gun.
And oh, okay.
So they bought two of them at the same time, got a deal on them or whatever, from that gun shop over in Acme. And we always had ambitions to get the 450 Marlin because they made the guide gun in three different calibers, the 444, mm-hmm. 45-70, and the 450 Marlin.
Right.
At some point we'll get one, but.
That would be really cool because, like, on Christmas or your birthday, you might. Not that you would expect something like that, but, like, you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's my birthday, and my dad's like, here's your birthday gift or whatever. But, right. Like, a random Tuesday, you come home from school, and your dad's like, by the way, I bought you a gun. Oh, you're like, what? Legit.
It's like,
dude, that's sweet.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit
shoot this thing.
How my brother and I got our guns. My grandpa has a deal where, you know, back in the day for him, you know, siblings born in a barn and whatnot, it was a big deal to graduate high school. So he has a deal with all of the grandkids that he'll buy you your first gun, and then you get to keep it if you graduate high school, which I think everyone's kept their gun. But
so if you don't graduate high school,
He takes it back.
No shit.
But all the other grandkids, they go out and pick their gun and whatnot, and Justin, he ended up getting a pretty sweet gun that was picked for him. But then I personally think I have the best gun. I got his old muzzleloader. Oh, I say sweet. Old, it's like a newer Thompson Center.
Yeah.
Because the only reason he was willing to give it away was because he went and got the Thompson Center Encore, which is like the one that you can swap out the barrels and stuff.
Those are sweet.
Yeah. And so that's like, and it just, it all, my brother just got home from school one day and my grandpa's like, oh yeah, you guys should come over, you know, we'll have dinner. And he goes out on the back porch and he pulls it and he shoots it too, and he barely got it on his shoulder. It's a 243, you know, it's a little cork gun.
Yeah. There you go.
And my brother's like, oh, that thing's sweet, you know, and it's like a break open barrel with hammer and whatnot. He's like, that's cool. And so he thought that was pretty cool, and then yeah. he went over to the gun safe and grabbed the muzzleloader for me. I was like, that's even cooler.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we got to shoot that. It feels like you're loading a miniature cannon, you know, when you're...
It pretty much is a miniature 15 cannon.
15 years old. I was like, this thing's sweet.
Very similar process for a cannon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Basically.
Other than
the exception of a
using
fuse.
A pre-made powder caps or whatever, the 777 or whatever, Pirate X.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, actual black powder versus
I think you can use actual black powder and, like, use paper in a ball.
Oh, yeah.
Those guns.
Yeah.
But you can use black powder in most anything.
You could shoot black powder out of a modern-day rifle if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to load my revolvers and .45-70 with black powder. It's just I don't want to clean it. It's a pain in the ass, but...
Yeah, plus there's no advantage to it because you're not gaining it. It's more powerful with smokeless powder.
It's just cool.
It is cool, but it's not like you can go hunt a deer with a 45-70 that's half as powerful as it was before.
That Pyrodex is not smokeless.
No.
Those muzzleloaders are so smoky when you shoot them.
Yeah, I'm talking about like...
Like actual cartridge gunpowder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to...
Right. Because you do all your own reloads, but like...
I've loaded some...
I don't know.
Some 45-70s to like the original loading, like black powder velocities. You can do it with different powders and stuff.
Huh.
That's when for my bachelor party, I was shooting 300 yards, open sights, 45-70, at like, you know, 1,100 feet per second or whatever it is. You could see through the spotting scope, you could see the back of the bullet dropping in.
Oh, yeah.
The reflection off the sun.
Yeah, that's like my favorite thing on YouTube if somebody is going to shoot an elk from like a mile away. Or, like, I've watched a couple of bear hunts where they take a shot from, like, 800 yards, and you can see the bullet just drop right in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's satisfying.
It is.
That's why
satisfying.
I like lighted nocks as well, because you can
see
the arrow
cool
coming.
Watch, especially on a trad bow.
Trad bow would be cool, because it's a lot slower.
Like, 30 yards. It's just like...
Yeah. It's annoying to shoot lighted nocks at, like, 20 yards with a compound, because it's...
Basically,
you're just like, okay, cool. I can see where it hit in the target easier.
Laser beams.
Yeah. No, from like 50 or 60 yards, though, it starts getting cool.
I've never seen them.
Like 150 yards, just.
I have one lighted knock. I don't remember where I got it, but I have one.
Probably just found it in the woods.
It was something I don't remember.
Broken off.
Yeah, I don't know.
They break really easy.
Really?
Some of them, yeah. It depends on the brand. I have not had good luck with all of them. They've all had their... I guess I haven't tried Fire Knock. Those are the really expensive ones. But, like, NAP makes lighted knocks, and they've been on and off. Nocturnal's been okay, but I've still had some issues with them. And Luminoc is, like, they work until they don't. And
yeah,
just,
I feel
there's
like
no
mine are,
telling.
Are really hard, like, they're... You know, because you got to kind of like pull them out a little bit, and then that pressure is what turns them on.
Oh, those are the NAP ones.
Yeah.
The whole knock comes back a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the NAP, yeah.
And they're so freaking tight in the arrow that
uh-huh.
to turn them off, you have to like get pliers or use your teeth or something.
Yeah.
It's a.
I think my favorite design is the nocturnal illuminated knocks because they have a little button. At the bottom of the knock. So you knock your arrow and there's like that little detent that the string sits on, you know.
Right.
And then when you shoot that, the string launches forward and pushes the button in the back of the knock. It's like a little pin. And then to turn it off, there's just a little window and there's a tiny little collar inside the knock that you just push towards the back of the arrow. And you can do it with like, they make a tool for it, but I usually did it with the blade to one of my mechanicals. Would fit in there, and you just like slide it a little bit.
Huh, that's kind of cool.
Turns right off. But they're pretty chintzy, and they're way heavier than a normal knock.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You have to sight your bow into lighted knock.
Right.
Because it's like 40 grains versus 3 grains or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that battery. Gets you every time.
Yep.
And it's illegal to use them in a state like, what is it, Utah? Doesn't allow any electronics. Or Idaho, maybe.
Really? Even a lighted knock?
Yep. You can't have a light on your site either.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That was a game changer for me, putting the, you know, I got that spot hog, putting that lighted sight on there.
Yeah, it does wonders for fiber optics.
Yeah, because, man, I couldn't see shit.
I use that. I shoot the UltraView UV3 on my 3D rig. And it's got, like, that whole scope housing, but that light gets really bright, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has a really low setting. So my favorite, I used it all day at TAC, shooting out of when you're in the shade and you're shooting into another shaded part, you know, because you a lot of times you're shooting like across a ski hill. So the middle of it is all clear because it's a ski hill, but you're shooting from like brush to brush. And so the target's dark and then your pin's dark. You just click that on the lowest setting. It does wonders. Awesome.
Yeah, I use mine pretty often.
Especially with a single pin.
Mm-hmm.
So nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see the advantage of like, because it's the same thing with a rangefinder. It's like, is that is technology aiding in the hunt. You can't have a rangefinding bow sight.
So you can use a rangefinder, but you can't use a lighted knock?
Yeah, my understanding is you can use a rangefinder, but it can't be attached to your bow.
Oh.
And at that point, I'm like, okay, that's stupid. You know, like that just...
Seems kind of weird.
It doesn't take me that long to range, because I can be...
I get what I can have an
arrow.
Do.
Yeah, but I can have an arrow knocked. I can have my rangefinder right here, range the deer, dump it in my pouch, draw and shoot. That doesn't take any longer than pointing your bow at the target, ranging it. Excuse me, ranging it, finding the next pin, and then shooting.
No, I get
you
that.
You might
though.
Save a couple seconds.
Yeah, I get that. Because, like, the. Who was the first one? That Garmin Zero rangefinder site?
Yeah, Garmin and Oracle, I think, were the first two to do it.
Like, I'm not super thrilled about that. Like, it just seems.
Have you ever played with one?
No.
They're awesome.
I don't know.
Dude, they're...
I feel like that's next, like, that's taking it too far. That's the line for me.
Is it a digital site or a range-finding bow site?
Range-finding site.
Because, like, the Trophy Ridge React Digital is a digital sight tape, but it still has, like, a physical pin, and it doesn't range-find.
Right, it's and just, that makes sense. It's just, like, I don't know.
See, but I don't like the digital sight tape, personally. I'm not, like, against it. I'm not going to be like, oh, you use it, but I wouldn't like that.
What's the advantage of it?
It's really fast to change your sight tape. You don't have to have, like, a bunch of sight tapes for your bow. You just punch in your arrow weight and your feet per second, and then I think you sight in 20 yards, and then the rest of it's good.
Oh.
So. Yeah, you just use a chronograph, get your real arrow speed, and then use a scale. Right. Get your real
That's one thing
weight.
I need to get. I need to get a chronograph. I don't have one. I've always wanted one.
They're not too expensive. They're like $150.
Not bad.
Like the Caldwell or whatever.
Yeah.
You can also use them for reloading.
Yeah, right. That's like...
Like we had to use it all the time before we went to competition to make sure that our loads were within our class of shooting because they've got high power and low power class.
Oh.
And you got to, like, you want to ride the line of...
Right.
Low power. What's, if you're shooting high power, you want to load it real low. That way you're not dealing with kick. Right?
Yeah.
So you want to ride that bottom line.
And in the low power class, you have like a minimum?
You just want to make sure that you're not going above it because then you have to be in high power. And then you're competing with people that are...
Like really good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never... Never had any ambitions to do reloading, I'll be honest.
It's so much cheaper.
It's way cheaper.
I know it's cheaper, but I'd rather pay Justin $20 to reload for me.
You can't. You can buy all your materials and then go use his reloader.
Oh, you can't pay someone to
reload?
You
cannot pay someone to.
Oh. Well, I'm glad we never did that.
Yeah. Because I was trying would to you do just, it would up you
just,
north
can
with
somebody
my buddies.
Just do it for you?
Someone can do it for you and give it to you for free.
If you buy the material?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's no big deal.
Okay.
The only thing you got to worry about is, like I don't do it for a ton of people. Like, I wouldn't do it for just anybody.
Like a random person.
Because then you have some, a certain amount of liability.
Well, that's probably why it's illegal.
Yeah, oh, it is, 100%. But, like, you know, my dad does it for, like, my uncle and, you know, my brother-in-law and whatnot. And,
yeah.
You know, but usually he'll take their gun and he'll, like, develop the load with
like
their
the
gun.
Whole system, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just like, oh, I'm just going to make some random-ass, you know, load and here you go.
That was a nice thing in the UP. So we had, like, the book that told you what to load each one for, you know. It came with the reloader.
Oh, for sure.
You know, this was like my first time doing it, so I don't know a whole lot about it. But mm-hmm. there was a book that told you, you know, do you want to do this feet per second and whatnot? Use this.
Yeah,
brand,
you have
this
all your
bullet.
All your reloading manuals for each brand of bullets. And I mean,
we lived like 10 minutes away from the range, or the guy that reloaded, he lived 10 minutes away from the range. So we would just bring all our guns with us, and then we'd run like 2 rounds or whatever. We go out there, chronograph it, and then we'd be like, yeah, we're good. So,
yeah, it's a whole, I mean, you can, like, my dad goes crazy into it. He'll take.
And then we'd make 2,000 rounds.
Yeah, right. But he'll make, like, you know, if he's loading for, like, his 7 mag, he'll do one at, you know, 65 grains of powder. And then
I'm at 67.
65 and a half, 66.
Really?
67. You know, he'll make all these steps. See which one groups the best, and it's different for every rifle.
See, I'm not that good. I'm not a good enough shot to notice that difference, which
most
is why I think
most people aren't.
I'm just okay with store-bought ammo.
Yeah, but like I haven't developed a load for my 45-70 yet. That's really dialed it in, just because it takes so much time. Like, you got to load 3 of them here and 3 of them there. And
it makes sense for like really rare cartridges,
mm-hmm.
Or cartridges that are just hard to find, like 300 Weatherby Magnum.
Even 300 Win Mag, I mean, you're paying 60, 70 bucks a box.
Yeah.
Which right now it's hard to buy. Like, it's just hard to find the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's getting more and more expensive, but I think it's still cheaper than
store-bought. I just don't know enough about ballistics, and I don't think I'm a good enough shot for it to matter. I just...
Probably not, because you haven't done it.
Well, I just... Yeah. And it just, like...
The other reason that we were reloading was, you know, like... Even with cheap rounds, once you buy enough of them, it's cheaper to reload.
Did you guys have a progressive press?
Yeah.
It does, like,
it
multiple
was six
stages.
Stage.
Yeah.
Six stage.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Like, when you're doing, like, 9mm, like, for me, it's not worth it to load 9mm or 223 or anything.
No, that's what we're loading was 9.
Unless you have.
We would load, like, 2,000 rounds of 9 because it's way cheap. By the time, you know, you're competitive pistol shooting, you're going to go through...
250
sometimes
rounds a day.
250 rounds a day.
Yeah. If your time
if
is
not
worth
more.
Anything at all to you,
and
it's way cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So
you also have to enjoy that process, though.
Oh, for sure.
So it'd be like fletching arrows. There are times where...
It's the same exact thing.
Right, but there are times where I'm like, this is, you know, therapeutic, and you're, like, very methodical with, like, building arrows, and it's the whole process, right? You get the arrows cut, you square them, you glue in the inserts, you put the wraps on, you fletch them, like... That whole process is something I enjoy. And then there are other times where I've got a buddy who's like, hey, I've got 3 arrows that I need to have refletched, just like, you know, green blazer veins. I'm like, dude, come on. Like, you know, straight, no helical, no offset. It's just like, okay, I'll do it. But like, it's not enjoyable.
Right.
Which would be me if I was just loading a ton of 9mm personally. Unless I was doing a competition where I knew I was saving a bunch of money.
Yeah,
it would get
honestly,
boring.
It wasn't
versus,
like an enjoyable thing for me. It was, I know that I'm taking it from 26 cents or sometimes 30 cents a round down to 16.
Yeah.
When I
versus.
Or 12.
You know, making your own 357, 45-70,
right,
300 Win Mag loads.
When I loaded that 44 mag, you know, I made 300 rounds or whatever it is, and it just took forever. And it was fun and... whatever, but then you burn through them, and it's like, geez, I should just buy some of these things.
Did you make loads for that 300?
No, not specifically for that gun. I had some left over from other 300 Win Mag.
And it still didn't group?
No, it did. With the, with my reloads, it grouped good. With your store-bought ammo, it did not group very good.
Does not group good.
But with my hand loads, it grouped fine.
What do you think's the difference there? Why would it like a reload versus a...
It's just gun dependent. I mean, every gun's different. Hmm. Depending on the throat length of the, you know, chamber, the twist rate, you know, there's so many different variables that every gun's going to be a little bit different. So it just might have, you can maybe go buy, you know, Hornady American Whitetail. It might shoot that stuff fine.
It shot.
But whatever reason that.
The best grouping I got from it was Winchester Deer Season XP.
Yeah.
Which is kind of not a very popular round. Not everybody likes
it. And any of those kind of cheaper, you know, store-bought.
But those normal loads, it's nice because it's like usually all brand new brass.
Right.
But they're really hot loads. Muzzle velocity of that thing is like 3,400 feet per second.
Yeah, and those I think were 150 grain.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Where I was shooting 180
versus 180, or 200. 180 Deer Season XP is what group. There's 183.
Maybe that, you know, maybe that rifle takes a little bit, or it wants a little bit heavier bullet.
Could be, yeah.
You know, who knows? I'm going to load up some 220 grain round nose for it and see how it does.
Round nose on a 300 Win Mag?
Hell yeah. Just for fun.
Aren't you going to, like, lose velocity and accuracy with that?
Yeah. It'd be fine.
All right.
I mean, for around here, if I was going out west, I would definitely not use that. But for around here, I'm just going to use it for a...
Did you feel like that gun kicked a lot with that 150?
No.
I didn't find it very fun to shoot.
You got to be used to shooting. I've had a bunch of 300 Win Mag. Like, I've shot a bunch of 300 Win Mag and high caliber rifles. Like,
it kicks more than a 308.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's not unbearable. So, I mean, it's whatever you're used to.
I mean, I shot 10 rounds of it and had a, or not, shot two 10 round sessions, 150 and 180, so 20 rounds total.
Yeah.
And after 20 rounds, I had a bruise on my arm the next day.
Right.
You know, part of that was probably me not shouldering the gun properly, not shooting properly, but yeah.
I think Nick still needs to get out and shoot that 12 gauge.
Yeah.
I have a 12 gauge.
No, his 12 gauge, I don't know what it is. If it's just the stock design or
it's,
what, but
it's bad.
That 12 gauge.
The single shot?
Yeah.
That 12 gauge kicked more than my grandpa's 10 gauge.
Piece of crap. I mean, it was $140, but it goes bang.
Hard.
You're going to blow up in my face, I'm sure.
It won't, but it
No, but
it
it'll
kicks.
Kiss you in the cheek if you cheek it.
Oh, I very rarely bring my cheek to, because I have a, I'm going to out myself a little bit here, but my Franke has a red dot on it. And so I rarely have to bring my cheek down to the gun.
Oh,
I
can this just is look a bead.
The red dot. Yeah. I can shoot with a bead, but it's a lot quicker target acquisition with the red dot. And I mostly use that gun for turkey hunting, so it's no big deal. If I was going duck hunting, I'd probably take it off because I'd be bullied into extinction.
Yeah, I've shot clays with a red dot. And
it's like cheating.
Did the old guys give you a hard time?
No, because I wasn't with any old guys, but I felt weird.
Yeah, you feel like a poser.
Yeah.
For sure.
You knew what the old guys would be saying.
Oh, I know what the old guys would be saying.
It would be the same thing that you would be saying if you saw me shooting a red dot, shooting skeet.
Yeah. Mine was like it wasn't like a red dot, like a little mini red dot. It was a full-on, like, AR.
Like a True Glow?
Yeah, it was a piece of crap. But I was in high school, and I thought it was cool. Shit happens.
That's all right. Yeah, shit happens. I did.
I tried to tactical out. Like, I have a Mossberg 500 20 gauge.
Yeah.
And I tried to, like, make it all tactical and.
And what red dots on top?
Yeah, it was I don't even know what it was. Like a Barska or something.
Dude, that's worse than a True Glow.
Yeah. No, seriously. And I bought, like, the, like, pistol grip, like, adjustable stock on it. And
you make fun of me for putting that True Glow on that crossbow.
I put it all back. I took all of that stuff off, and it's just back to factory.
Just so you know, if either one of you wants a recurve crossbow, I've got one you can have, because I don't use it.
No, thank you.
And I got 3 bolts for it, so.
You should probably just throw it away.
I don't want to throw it away. I want to give it to somebody who can actually use it.
Like the garage sale? Have a Groucho.
I would consider that. But I also get a little bit sketched out with that because it's like, what kind of people are coming here?
You said it's a recurve? Like, I've sold guns at a Groucho.
No, it's just a low-powered crossbow.
Oh.
It's, like, if it was old. It was like $130 center point from Dunham's.
I was going to say, like, if it was something cool you could put on the wall, but...
No, it's not cool.
Also, it's a crossbow, so...
It's a crossbow. You know what I should do? I should bring my Fleetwood over. We can have Jared shoot that. If we all shoot trad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I forgot about
that.
That you had that.
Because I have a pretty beginner-friendly, inexpensive recurve.
Yeah, do that before the podcast sometime.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Come over a little earlier.
We should do that. That'd be fun.
And then you guys can make fun of me in the podcast for not knowing what I'm doing.
It's okay.
I think you'd be all right with trad because everyone has the same handicap. It's difficult. There's no...
You can't suck too bad. I mean, you can, but...
But like
everyone does.
You either hit the target or you miss, and if you miss, it's like, okay, everybody's going to miss. I guarantee you if we shoot, I'll miss at least 6 times out of 20 shots. Because it's just, unless we only shoot at 12 yards. I don't know, though, because I did pretty well once I figured out that aiming system. I was doing all right. Yeah, except for the grizzly bear.
The grizzly bear is way off. I mean, literally, this grizzly bear was probably 6 feet tall.
I just shot it and 8 feet above its head.
Probably more than that. The arrow was gone. The second arrow was probably 8 feet. Like, he came down.
Second arrow was
shot 8 foot over.
The second arrow was like 19 feet in the air in this tree.
I'll show you a picture after. It's
And it was like this tiny little sapling, thank God. And then I was able to bend it over and get my arrow back. But the other one, I have no idea where it went. Thank God there was like nobody back. It was just like a hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I don't whitetail hunt with a recurve right now. Because I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing.
That was a long shot, too. I mean, it was like probably 40 yards.
Yeah.
I'd probably like maim it. Just shoot it in the leg.
Yeah, you got to practice all summer. Like, you should have been practicing 3 months ago. If
I'm not. I knew I wasn't.
No, I know. Me either.
I needed to focus on actually, you know, being successful as far as shooting a big buck or something, because right now it's just word, you know. It's like, yeah, I talk about all this, but I don't shoot a lot of deer, so. Which really comes down to more of like not hunting the same property.
Yeah.
Because if that property's not producing deer the way it should be for me to be able to be successful, I need to go hunt public or go to a place like Ohio or another farm around here, and I just didn't use... I have the resources to do that, and I just didn't use them last year. I was hyper-focused on hunting that farm because there's one big buck on the property, but he never showed up all season, and I should have known better than to just stick around, but I did, so... Yeah. But, yeah, one other thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap this up. My plan this year, and I know we talked about this, but I wanted to talk a little bit more details as far as our public land hunt.
Yeah.
Packing a deer out. We talked about this, right?
Yeah, we did. I have a spot, so over by Twin Birch.
Yep.
There's little chunks of, I mean, this would not be like our big trip.
Right.
But we could do a couple smaller hunts. I found an access point to these little squares right on the backside of the golf course. They have all their mountain bike trails back there now.
Yep.
I saw tons of deer back there. And there's little public land squares, and I really want to hunt that.
How big a square is we talking?
I don't know for sure. I'd have to look on the map.
Because we might be able to get permission to access something from the golf course side if we wanted to.
Yeah. Possibly. But if we don't, we can access it. I found a way to access
it. If it's 1 acre, we can't hunt it. If it's 5, I would hunt it.
Yeah, I'd have to look and draw it out. I don't remember.
But regarding that, I got that Kafaru pack all set up, and it is so sweet.
You got to bring that next time so I can check it out.
Yeah. I should. We'll do a little powwow next time, shoot some bows, and I'll bring the Kafaru pack.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty sweet. But there's also some things that, like, I got a couple of ideas on how I want to set it up. Get your opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think I'm going to switch it up to the Manimal for most of the season.
I would.
But
that's supposed to be restocking this week or next. They said the next week.
I got the email about it. I got the email about the Rogan, too, and I almost bought one today, but I didn't pull the trigger yet. So
you should. Fanny packs are coming back.
Yeah, just $140 for a fanny pack seems a little bit outrageous. But it is really cool. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it into my IFAC kit as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like IFAC in the front and then the rest, you know, carry gun or whatever is right. Back tourniquet. But
yeah,
I'm excited for it. So it'll be cool. We could do a whole gear dump, get Jared to get his backpack out and load him up.
My little Amazon backpack.
Oh, I thought you had a Osprey.
No, I'm looking at buying an Osprey because this one's got a rip in it. So,
I'm telling you, and to anyone listening, if you're looking at getting into some backpacking stuff, Kafaru is still running closeout deals on some of their older stuff. If you're interested, check it out. Because I just picked up the Modus and the Duplex Tactical Light Frame, and it is really sweet, because that would have been like a $900 setup. I think I picked it up for just under $600. So
that's a really good deal. I mean,
yeah,
like I was looking at them and I was like, wow,
yeah,
I should buy another one.
You did, not from closeout.
Yeah, no, I have one frame and multiple bags.
Yeah, but you'll get the Arc frame before the season.
No.
We'll see.
Maybe, but probably not. I would, yeah. It's only going to save me like a pound, but it would be a lot more comfortable.
It's a lot more rigid.
Maybe I'll put it on my Christmas list.
Well, then my frame. I don't know what your Christmas list. Santa can bring it to you.
Yeah, I hope so. I've been writing him letters.
Yeah. We got to have a chat. Because, no. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. That was a little bit of a tangent, but I just wanted to make sure we're doing that. So,
yeah.
Cool stuff in the works. Possibly an Ohio trip for deer season. Backpacking trip sounds like maybe the end of August, and then packing out a deer. And also thinking about getting that YouTube channel up and going for filming hunts. I think that'd be cool.
That'd be sweet.
So, sweet. Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you in episode 4.
See ya.
Bye.